stocked with food. We used to live at home, now I stay at the house. And everybody wants to be special here. They call you.
Song that almost made last week's set list of drinking songs. It's The Replacements. Here Comes a Regular, by request here on the Viva La Mock radio program. Also in that set of music, Johnny and Santo, or Santo and Johnny, depends on which way you want to give them their billing, did an updated version of their hit Sleepwalk. Played the Ink Spots in there, pulled out the 78s for this one. With when the Swallows return to Capistrano, because today's actually the day that they leave Capistrano. Apparently they leave on a very specific day, and it's today. So if you're in the area, don't stop by tomorrow, because they'll be gone. And start off the entire set with something from Galaxy 500, doing George Harrison's Isn't It a Pity, which was released on this day, the George Harrison version, as his very first single post-Beatles in 1970. Wow. I amaze myself. The following is a message for those fortunate enough to care for a person who has always been their hero. Growing up, your hero was always there. They repaired your first broken heart. They took care of you when you got sick. and they sent you into each chapter of your life with advice and lessons that left you feeling ready to conquer the world. But with the passing of time, the tables have turned, and your hero now needs you more than ever. AARP is here to help care for your hero. Find the care guides you need to help complete. Oh, I'm sorry. To help with complete with tips. That's what it is. I was going to help you complete something, but no. With help complete with tips and resources at aarp.org/caregiving. Message brought to you by ARP, the Ad Council, and the Moxster. Hey, it's, I don't know, it's sometime after midnight. No, it's not. It's after 9. I'm just pushing to the midnight hour already. Sometime after 9 here on the Viva La Mock radio program. As I mentioned, that replacements was a request. Someone went to the old interwebs and emailed me a request last week and said, hey, Moxster, welcome back. Glad you're on the air. We've been listening every Friday, and you haven't been on the air, but we've really dug the mix of music. Maybe even better when you're not on the air. Hint, hint. No, they actually didn't say any of that. But loyal listeners, and I appreciate you listening. Always, you can send me a request for a future show at wrctrequest@gmail.com. And yes, welcome back.
Hi, Mrs. Johnson. Is Paul gay?
No, Johnny. Paul's not gay.
Hi, Mrs. Johnson. Is Paul in rehab?
No, Johnny. Paul's on dope.
Hey, Mrs. Johnson, is Paul on fire?
Yes, Johnny, Paul is on fire.
Hi, Mrs. Johnson. Is Paul dead?
Yes, Johnny. Paul is dead.
Paul, I'm dead. push from the left and a shove from the right. It's all planned out. We'll do it tonight.
Push the president in his wife. Surface behind bars. Good day, sir. Good day, sir. Go!
Time is the arsenal, I keep enough gases. Got a day to night, but I keep trying to rally. Been sitting there for years, I'm gonna have it.
Forbes Avenue is a production of WRCT Pittsburgh. The opinions expressed are those of the participants and not necessarily those of WRCT, its members, or Carnegie Mellon University. Email questions or comments to pa@wrct.org.
This is WRCT Pittsburgh. My name is Aubriana Bench, and I'm joined by my oldest brother, Andrew Bench. Today we'll be looking at a smaller borough located a few miles north of Pittsburgh called Westview Borough. Andrew and I both grew up in Westview and being history nerds have learned quite a bit about it. But I wanted to bring Andrew today because he has some special experience with the borough. So, Andrew, I already introduced you, but go ahead and tell us what you do right now.
Well, right now I work for the Allegheny County Health Department doing clerical work. But before I was at the county, I worked for Westview Borough for about 6 years. And while I was at Westview, I was an administrative assistant, but I was also their archivist. So one of the things that I did was I was tasked with digitizing Westview's archives. And it's a pretty small borough in terms of size, but over 100 and something years, you generate a lot of paperwork. And legally, The borough, and any municipality for that matter, has to keep certain documents, and they wanted to have a copy of them digitally in case something ever were to happen. So through that work, I became well acquainted with Westview's history, and I even started giving presentations at my alma mater, or our alma mater, North Hills High School. I give local history presentations from time to time. Very passionate about Pittsburgh history in general.
So let's go to the beginning of Westview. How far back does it go? Do we go to the 1700s or like...
Well, I mean, you can't tell the history of any place in America without first acknowledging the fact that we're all on land that once was used by Native Americans. So prior to any European settlement, there were many Native American tribes that were living in what is now Pittsburgh. As European settlers started to arrive, and as they pushed farther west, this forced a lot of Native American tribes into this area in particular. This was called the Ohio Country in the 1700s, and it was considered the frontier. Pittsburgh was at the westernmost part of the frontier. And so Westview's history goes back to that. There's a guy by the name of Caspar Real who in the 1790s, I believe it was 1795, he was given land for his service in the Continental Army during the Revolutionary War. And that land is the bulk of what Westview is today. So he was given this land, and at first he couldn't use it because there were the threat of Native American attacks. Eventually, after the Battle of Fallen Timbers in Toledo, Ohio today, it pushed the Native Americans out of the Ohio country, and he was able to settle, and he built a log cabin, which is still there in Westview. It is one of the oldest structures in southwestern Pennsylvania. It's actually a residential property to this day. It was turned into a weird house, hybrid cabin thing. You know what I'm talking about. You've seen it. So that's where Westview's history really starts with Caspar Real. Eventually what happens is in the early 1800s, a group of settlers come together and they petition the courts to create Ross Township. Ross Township is partitioned from Pine Township. Pine Township is Wexford today. Ross Township is created, and for 100 years, Westview is just a vague name of an area within Ross Township. It's not until 1905 that a guy by the name of Frederick Martzoff gets the idea to build a community. He was a land developer. He had built houses across the United States, and he came to the Westview area and was so enamored by it that he bought 700 acres and decided to build a community there. And so really it's Frederick Martzoff who, he's the father of Westview, if you will.
So were this Caspar Real guy and Martzoff alive at the same time, or what's the timeline here?
No, so Caspar Real, he's born in the 1740s.
Oh, so he was old.
So he's a young man fighting in the Revolutionary War, and then he's in his midlife by the time he gets this land that is now Westview. Martzoff is born in the mid-1800s, I want to say 1848. Okay. And he doesn't start building houses in Westview until 1905, and actually, unfortunately, passes away in 1907, so he wasn't around very long to see it. So no, separate time periods altogether.
So was there anything interesting going on between 1795 and the mid-1800s in Westview?
I don't know. I mean, it depends on your definition of interesting. So Westview... The reason that Westview and this whole area, for that matter, were settled, part of the reason is obviously Pittsburgh is situated at the the merging of the two rivers into the Ohio River, so it's a prime spot for industry. But the reason that the greater northern part of Pittsburgh, the North Hills, even all the way up to Erie, there's a road there that was built by Native Americans. It was a trail called the Venango Trail. And so Westview is situated right on the Venango Trail. It was an existing road that settlers could use. And so that made it very easy for them to leave downtown Pittsburgh and go north. And you could take it all the way up to Erie. There was a fort in Erie, so there were settlements all the way up. In terms of distinct events in the 1800s, that's when the population of Pittsburgh and the surrounding areas starts to go up, but it's not really until after the Civil War that Pittsburgh starts to industrialize. Mm-hmm. In fact, Westview and Ross were mostly farmland until the late 1800s. It was the country.
So the Venango Trail, is it hard to pinpoint when that first started? Because obviously it's still around today.
Yes. We don't know for various reasons, which would be a whole other episode. We don't know a lot about early Native American history. So we don't know when the road was created. We know that they were using it for centuries prior to European settlers arriving. It was probably formed by ancient buffalo herds that were migrating. A lot of Native American trails, they would use trails that they found. So thousands of years ago, there were buffalo in this area that would migrate, and they probably beat that path into the ground over centuries, and then the Native Americans, why wouldn't they use it? It's less work. They don't have to build it. And same with the European settlers. Once they arrive, there's already this trail here that goes all the way up to Lake Erie. In fact, the Venango Trail allowed, they sent supplies up the Venango Trail all the way to Lake Erie, and it actually was part of the reason that Commodore Perry was able to win the Battle of Lake Erie, because they were able to get the supplies up there during the War of 1812. Well, that's something going on in the 1800s.
Well, so now part of this trail is called Perry Highway after this guy.
So we're still using it.
Yeah.
Today. In fact, the Perry Highway that we have, Route 19, whatever you want to call it, it is more or less the same sort of path that the Venango Trail would have been. There are obviously variations. But if you start to research the history of a lot of roads in the area, a lot of them were once trails, because when Europeans arrived, that's what they started using as well. And so a lot of the roads today are where the trails used to be, including Perry Highway.
So circling back to Westview, or going back into that area, let's go back to when the Martzoff guy, you said early 1900s, when was it, when he passed away?
He died in 1907.
Okay. So wasn't it around that time when Westview Park first started or was founded? Mm-hmm. And that was a major thing for Westview, right?
Yeah, Westview Park was actually, it opened in 1906. So it basically existed as long as Westview had. Westview is incorporated in 1905, and then the park opens a year later. So as you can imagine, the park became an integral part of Westview. I mean, for 70 plus years, that was the heart of Westview in terms of business and bringing people in to the area.
So because it was such a critical part of Westview, whenever it started, because you and I both know about when Westview Park started its downfall, but do you want to enlighten listeners on what happened with Westview Park. And
do you just want me to give you an overview?
Yeah, just give an overview, because there were a lot of parks in the area where this kind of started happening, except for, as a lot of people know, Kennywood, which is still open. But
well, first, I will say I'm not the foremost expert on amusement parks. There is a guy, a Pittsburgh local named Mike Funyak, who wrote a very good book on Westview Park. So anybody who wants a deeper understanding of the park, I would check out his book called It's Westview Park, the T.M. Harden Story. But at the turn of the century, the early 1900s, these parks were really popular. There were dozens of them all over. There were many in the Pittsburgh area. They're the most, some of the more notable ones are Westview Park, there's Luna Park, Kennywood. And it's because that's, at the time, that's what people were doing for fun. These parks were, I would argue that they thrived for two reasons. One, you may have heard Kennywood referred to as a picnic park before. It's because it was built on what was a picnic ground. And then the park, they would encourage people to bring your families, bring a picnic, and then go ride things at the park. Westview Park is the same. It started as a picnic park. The land was purchased, and then it became a picnic park where they would encourage families to come, bring food, and then ride things. You also have to remember that early amusement parks, you're not buying a ticket, and then you can ride anything. You're paying per ride. So individual companies would have rides at these parks, and they would collect some of the revenue from people. So they're obviously, these people want to build cool rides, so people come ride their ride. That's the whole thing behind Westview Park. So it's a picnic park. The other important thing is that it's situated at the end of a trolley line. Back in the day, we had a much more robust public transportation system, and you could actually take a trolley from anywhere in the greater Pittsburgh area to Westview Park. It ended right at Westview Park, the trolley line. So anybody could get there, and that was a huge, huge advantage for the park. People could easily get there. When the park's created in 1906, a guy named T.M. Harden, he's the one that creates it. He's already a successful businessman. He manufactures and operates amusement park rides. So he already has a company, and he does so well that he says, shoot, why don't I just make a park and I'll put my own rides in the park? And so that's what he did. He's a Pittsburgh native as well. He picks Westview as the spot for this park. And Westview Park is there from 1906 to 1977. Within 10, 20 years of Westview Park being created, it's the only park in the area besides Kennywood. So for most of the 1900s, the only two amusement parks in this area in Pittsburgh are Kennywood and Westview Park. And they didn't really compete with each other because they're far enough away from each other that their crowds aren't necessarily picking one over the other. So they existed, you know, just fine with each other.
Is there any reason why Westview kind of started seeing a downfall? Was it 50s or?
60s. So again, if you talk to some of the older residents in Pittsburgh, they'll often, you might hear, oh, well, Westview Park couldn't compete with Kennywood. Not true. They weren't really seeking to steal each other's customers. Westview Park is about 18 acres, but that's it. If you go to the Westview Shopping Center, that's where Westview Park was. It's pretty small. There's not a lot of space to expand, so by the 1940s, they've taken all the available land they possibly can use. Their golden era was after World War II. The baby boomer generation is their children at that point, so they are obviously going to the park. So in the 40s and 50s, Westview Park does really well. Starting in the 60s, attendance starts to falter. And honestly, even until they closed, their attendance wasn't bad. It just didn't continue to go up. Part of what happened, they couldn't expand anymore. That meant they couldn't put new rides in to attract potential new visitors. The other thing that happens is in 1973, there's a fire. Westview Park has a dance hall called Danceland, and Danceland was a huge spot where young Pittsburghers would go. A lot of people, older people in Pittsburgh, actually met their spouse at Danceland. It was a big deal. You'd go and listen to live music and dance. Well, that burns down in 1973, and they don't rebuild it. And that was one of the nails in their coffin. They just, as attendance faltered, they weren't able to keep up with the newest innovations, and so the park slowly declined. But even in its final year, 1977, attendance was not bad, but it wasn't great.
Kind of like a
slow decline. It was just a gradual decline. I'd say from about the mid-60s to 77 when
it closed. So if it had closed any later, it probably would have been slower and lower attendance, you think?
Yeah.
Yeah.
And I think it probably would have become more run down.
Yeah. And so do you think the closing of Westview Park, or like the slow-ish decline, I don't know if it would be a decline because they close it, right, whenever attendance was barely going down.
Mm-hmm.
But do you think it kind of, messed up Westview, or kind of put Westview into a hard spot towards the end of the 20th century?
Well, yes, short answer. There's a couple, I'm an avid Pittsburgh historian. So Pittsburgh becomes a steel manufacturing hub. And up until the 1960s, oh, that's another thing I didn't mention. The population of Pittsburgh in the 50s and 60s is double what it is today. Well, when the late 60s, early 70s come around, a lot of steel jobs are leaving Pittsburgh. And so there is a gradual decline of Pittsburgh's and the surrounding area's population. So Pittsburgh peaked at over 600,000 people. It wasn't until the 2020 census that we actually stopped losing population. We've steadied out at about 330,000, I believe. So we have half of our peak. So you have less people living in the area. Westview is a picnic park, and so people would have school picnics, company picnics, union picnics at the park. Well, less jobs, less steel companies, steel plants, less picnics, less population. And by the time Westview Park closes, the steel industry is almost entirely gone. By the early 80s, Pittsburgh is at one of its lowest points in terms of jobs. And Westview not only has less of a population, but they now lose one of the biggest draws to the borough. The park had existed as long as Westview had existed, and so for that park to suddenly close, the borough kind of has an identity crisis. It's like you're born with your right hand, and then all of a sudden your right hand's gone the next day. That would be pretty bad. I mean, that's kind of how I think of it. They existed together for so long. And so Westview does experience a little bit of a decline in terms of population. And even today, I would argue Westview, I'm biased because I work there and live there, but they do a really good job at maintaining their public services, paving the roads, keeping the parks and the borough looking really nice. I'd say they're exceptional because I've been in a lot of municipalities in Pittsburgh. But the one thing that they've struggled with is getting good local businesses back in the borough. And that's a problem that a lot of municipalities face. How do you attract people to do business in your municipality? And there have been a few new businesses that have opened up in Westview in the past 10 or so years. There's a great Italian restaurant near our house, Severina.
Coffee shop.
There's a new coffee shop that just opened. So there are things happening in Westview. But there was a decline, and I don't think it was Westview's fault. I think it was just the trends of what was happening in the greater Pittsburgh area, coupled with the fact that Westview Park closed. Yeah, I mean, that's going to cause a decline.
What would you like to see in the future of Westview? Do you think there's anything that could fix? I mean, well, maybe it doesn't need to be fixed, but what do you think? Up the population, bring back Westview Park.
Yeah, that would be cool. I don't know that Westview needs to be fixed. I think it's a very nice place to live.
A good place to live.
Yeah, their motto is a good place to live. It is. It truly is. I enjoyed growing up there. I enjoyed working there. I think the thing that would help Westview the most is making it an attractive place for people to come to, whether it's restaurants or various businesses that are there, make people want to come to Westview, and also continue maintaining the public services so that new people want to move in. That's the only way you're going to get more people coming in, is keeping it attractive. And I think that they are doing a really good job at that. Westview is certainly a place that I wouldn't mind going back to live in one day. It is pretty small. It's only about a square mile, so that, you know, there's a limited number of houses. But I think those are the two biggest things, is attracting more businesses and continuing to maintain the level of services so that people want to live there. I think, yeah.
Is there anything else that we haven't touched on that you think would be worth touching on?
Oh, geez. I don't know, like what?
Oh, man. What's one of your favorite things in terms of Westview or Pittsburgh history to talk about?
I talked about it earlier. I find it very interesting how it was settled, why it was settled, the Venango Trail, mm-hmm. people moving north. The early history of Pittsburgh around the French and Indian War, Revolutionary War period, is really cool. The Fort Pitt Museum has a really cool exhibition going on where it focuses on the early history of Pittsburgh, in particular conflicts with Native Americans. I find that very interesting. And in terms of Pittsburgh in general, I think it's very fascinating how Pittsburgh has gone from a filthy, disgusting, horrible place to live in terms of environmental health, and through the efforts of various figures over the decades, we have turned that around and become more than just a steel city. In fact, Pittsburgh today would be unrecognizable to somebody living during the Gilded Age. There's healthcare here, tech, higher education, like Carnegie Mellon. So the fact that Pittsburgh was able to pivot itself and turn it into something new, you don't always see that with cities. There are still cities that are struggling to get their footing after losing a major industry. You know, take Detroit, for example, or, you know, any, a lot, Cleveland. Pittsburgh is unique in that way. It's unique in a lot of ways, but I think the fact that we've continued to be a cool place to live, it's pretty neat. And I think we're unique in that regard. Does that make sense?
Yeah. What key figures?
The Pittsburgh Renaissance. David L. Lawrence, who was the mayor, and then I believe it was Richard Mellon III. I'm going to have to fact check myself, but those two figures are responsible for reshaping Pittsburgh, cleaning up the city. The convention center is named after him for a reason.
Mm.
And then, obviously, the school is named after the Mellon family, so those two figures. I should also mention that I used to work at the Frick, and so I know a lot of my other interest is Pittsburgh during the Gilded Age. But that's a whole other topic.
I'm doing that topic in my environmental history class right now.
It's very interesting.
I have learned that it might not... There is some, you can put Pittsburgh cleaning up on legislation, but it was actually mostly the cause of natural gas coming into the city. And more Pittsburghers using natural gas to power their homes.
That makes sense.
Instead of coal. Yeah. But anyways, it is short, but is there anything else you want to add before we finish out?
Check out Westview Borough's website, specifically the history section, because yours truly wrote it, and I'm very proud of it, because, you know, 6 years ago when I first started there was not a whole lot, and now you could actually go research it. And one of the highest compliments that I ever received from working at Westview was I got letters from elementary school kids. And they said that they loved the website and they were doing a project on Westview Park, and could I please send them pictures and information? And that was awesome, because that's what it's there for.
Yes.
Not for the glory. My information should be accessible.
Yes.
So yeah, check out Westview's website. There's a lot of really cool photos and things from the archives on their website still.
There are some really cool pictures of Westview Park. During its peak.
It would have been fun.
After, yeah.
I wish I could have experienced it. I'm sorry, not much of a Kennywood guy.
This is Aubriana Bench. I'm interviewing Andrew Bench.
WRCT.
Thank you for coming in, Andrew.
Thanks for having me.
I'll see you at home later tonight. All right.
Fine.
Bye.
Forbes Avenue is a production of WRCT Pittsburgh. The opinions expressed are those of the participants and not necessarily those of WRCT, its members, or Carnegie Mellon University. Email questions or comments to PA@WRCT.
Now, opening the vaults on over 100 years of recorded music history. Welcome to Cruisin' the Decades Global Edition. Get ready to go cruising through 100 years of popular music. This is a journey through music history from someone with a rather ridiculous record collection. Here's your host for Cruisin' the Decades, Brad Savage.
The airwaves are a blank canvas, and our job is to paint them. And this is episode number 145, CruisinTheDecades.com. And today, we welcome listeners on MVY Radio, Martha's Vineyard, and the world. And also, greetings to new listeners and U.S. troops stationed around the world on AFN, the Eagle, the primary radio station service all around the world, including Tokyo, Japan, at AM 810 on your dial, plus several signals in Italy and Germany and in Cuba. and Bahrain. It's pretty amazing. AFN the Eagle serves U.S. military communities all over the world and through the AFN Go app. So welcome, new listeners. Check out cruisinthedecades.com. One song per decade. And on today's show, well, I ain't never a country stomper from 1959, plus modern technology and communications in the 1940s with Slim Gaylord. We've got an anti-suicide song, a rock ballad that became a surprise hit in 1988. And singer Amy Shark does a live performance from Sydney, Australia, live acoustic. And in 1970, a breath of fresh air. Welcome to Cruise in the Decades. Now we'll begin in the 1910s, then pick a song from the 20s, 30s, 40s, and so on, right on up to the 2010s and 2020s. So let us begin with Prince's band in 1910. Not Prince of the 80s and 90s and 2000s. This is the original Prince band leader, Charles Prince, who released hundreds of records from the late 1890s up to his passing in 1937. And you could say Prince's orchestra and Prince's band and these recordings are somewhat akin to the music of John Philip Sousa. This particular selection is a 1910 recording called I'm Alabama Bound on Cruisin' the Decades.
An absurd record library that takes up his entire basement, host Brad Savage decided to share over 100 years of music with the world from super-powered shortwave broadcasters via internet streaming and on the top independent community and music radio stations across North America and the world. This is Cruisin' the Decades, 100 years of music.
I am a man of constant sorrow. I have seen trouble all my day. I've bid farewell to old Kentucky, the place where I was born and raised. Oh, for 6 long years.
That is a recording by Emery Arthur. I am a man of constant sorrow. One of the earliest versions and the version of the song that gave it its best known, more recent title. Most music scholars say that song dates back to 1913. It was originally titled Farewell Song, but it's one of those folk music standards that has been recorded by dozens of artists through the years. This is Cruisin' the Decades, 100 years of music, one song per decade. And it was well known because of the 2000 award-winning film, Oh Brother, Where Art Thou, which kind of repopularized that song and many songs from that early folk music canon. It's Cruisin' the Decades, where we appreciate and explore the history of music and the common thread into music today, current sounds that we listen to in modern times. We do it by picking one song per decade. I'm Brad Savage, and you can find all of our playlists and find all of our shows at cruisinthedecades.com. Coming out of North Carolina now, we go into the 1930s for another song with fascinating history and different versions, and later many subsequent cover versions of this song. This song is called I'm Just Here to Get My Baby Out of Jail. It's from 1936 by the Blue Sky Boys. It was famously covered on the Everly Brothers album, Songs Our Daddy Taught Us, all cover songs, released in 1958. And then it was covered again. The entire Everly Brothers album was covered song for song, track for track, by Nora Jones and Billy Joe Armstrong of Green Day around 2012. So just there alone, you've got several versions. And this is a pretty influential song. The earliest recollection I can find of this song dates back to 1931 by Carl and Hardy from Madison, Wisconsin. It became quite a standard, as you'll see. This is the Blue Sky Boys from 1936 on Cruisin' the Decades.
I'm not in your town to stay, said a lady old and gray to a warden in a penitentiary. Soon be on my way. I'm just here to get my baby out of jail. Oh, Warden, I'm just here to get my baby out of jail. Of his dad. I had searched both far and wide. I had thought that he had died. And at last to find my baby here in jail. Oh, Warden, but it's good to find my baby here in jail.
In recording technology and the evolution of musical styles of popular music through the decades and beyond. Over 100 years of music. This is the Global Edition of Cruise.